Hello and welcome to Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen of Nielsen Training and Consulting. Thrilled to be back for another episode of the podcast and another really important conversation that I've been looking forward to for quite a while. And it's about nonprofit leadership, particularly for new nonprofit CEOs. And that doesn't have to mean new in your career. It might mean new in your organization, new to a different challenge within an organization that you've been part of. To help us in that conversation, I'm thrilled to welcome Brian Quayle. Brian is the CEO and founder of Quayle Consulting. He is also the author of book, The Ultimate Guide for New Nonprofit CEOs. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be with you today.
I'm glad you're able to make the time to join us today for the conversation. Brian, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about your background. I know you have, like me, have experience having led nonprofits. I know our listeners would enjoy learning a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, thank you so much. I was really fortunate. Had a career over 4 decades in the public nonprofit arena. Really started my career after graduate school as a budget analyst for the Illinois Department of the Bureau of the Budget, doing health and human service program budgets. It was really a great exercise for me because I was there for 3 years, and it really helped me to set the analytical kind of foundation for all my career as I, went into fundraising, leading organizations. And it's all about networking and people, which we know, right? And so when I was at the Bureau of the Budget on my 3rd year, kind of making that decision, do I stay there or, go do something different? And sure enough, somebody from my past, when I was an intern with the United Way Crusade of Mercy in Chicago, when I was at the University of Chicago, called me up and said, I know you have this goal and you ultimately want to be a leader in the nonprofit or public space. You got to learn how to raise money. So we've got this great fundraising job open. Come be with us. And I said, yes, glad I did, because I was actually with the United Way system for 17 years,
Wow.
9 as a fundraiser and 8 as a CEO. Through that time, so when I left the bureau, I actually had 9 years as a development person, then 8 with the United Way, as I stated, with Hart Florida United Way, and then was the CEO for the Louisville area chapter of the American Red Cross for around 7 years, and also 11 years for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Broward County. And those experiences really helped me to shape my book and what I have put together for, people in the nonprofit sector. Because one of the things I enjoyed was, one, raising money. I was one of those that didn't mind hearing no, because I always took it as a, hey, it's just saying now's not the right time, but let's talk later. That was how I got through it, and had this abundance mindset, and was very optimistic in how I approached the business. And so, with all that said, I really had a wonderful career, raised over $1 billion, either by, a part of campaigns, overseeing, doing things within each of the sectors. And just helping millions of people through the programs that we operated and provided. And upon leaving in 2020, due to some personal circumstances, which I highlight in the book, I kind of had this little epiphany saying, hey, I've got all this knowledge and information. What was the one thing I really enjoyed a lot doing? And it was actually mentoring and helping new execs as they came into the fold. And how I did that was through each time I took on a new responsibility, I had these 5 frameworks that I developed as a new leader to understand my organization faster, quicker, and really get to the heart of the issues. And so I would actually mentor people on how to do that. I get that call from the national office saying, hey, we've got somebody in the middle of the country. They don't have a nonprofit background, but their board hired them. We think you're the guy that can, help them to kind of get up to speed. Or would you help us out to do that? And 90% of the time I'd always say yes. And it was really kind of utilizing these five frameworks. And so, Greg, is one of those things where I said, okay, I've got the time. Let me sit down, put pen to paper, or take out that, the trusty computer and just sit down and write. And it took me about 2.5 years to do it, but I'm really happy because I'm getting such great feedback from people.
Brian, it's
And
one of
you know, you're
those, as someone who made the transition in nonprofit leadership back in 2008 myself, I wish there had been a resource or a guide like that that I could have relied on or used at the time. You've referenced the five frameworks or ways of approaching an organization at a high level. Maybe walk us through what those five frameworks are.
Yeah, so the first framework I talk about is what a person should do in their first 90 days of being on the job. And it's really about setting what I consider would be an audacious goal as you're coming in as a new leader. And that goal is really setting yourself up to say, hey, how can I get outside the four corners of my office when I first start to really meet the people who are making the mission happen, the donors, the staff, the clients, and really kind of setting the tone for how can I, drink from a fire hose and get and obtain as much information as possible. So to give you a quick example, a very high level, with the Heart of Florida United Way, when I was their president and CEO, I set an audacious goal to say, hey, I'm going to meet all of the 78 organizations that we're providing funding to over 100 programs in the Tri-County area that are United Way represented. Plus, I'm going to meet with at least the top 10 donors, all my staff in their departments, and critical board members in the first 90 days. Now, people thought I was nuts, thought I was crazy, but we did it. And how we did it was that it was the art of me delegating to my team to be able to say, hey, I need this information, that information. So as I'm going out to different places and meeting people where they are, they were providing me information to prepare for those meetings. So at that particular time, I was really learning the community by not only kind of the written word, but when you get in your car and you travel around three counties and you're meeting people and agencies and communities where they are doing the work, from kids' issues to domestic violence to homelessness, you get a really good sense of how each community differs and what it makes up. So that's the first framework. And I go into a lot of examples there on how to do that and how to do it well.
Brian,
Framework.
I'd love to follow up with you on that first
Please.
framework that you mentioned, because it's such an important one. And I think one of the disservices that we sometimes do, particularly for new nonprofit CEOs, is that pressure of what is your plan? What are you going to do? What is the and sometimes we don't allow people the space to do what you were able to do, which is to take those 90 days and listen and learn
Yes.
and meet people where they are. There's always that. What's going to be different, or what are you going to bring to the organization, which is all important in due time. So I'm curious, what advice would you give for a nonprofit CEO who might be listening to the podcast and saying, I love that first framework. How can I respectfully and appropriately push back on my board or articulate the value of that 90-day window?
Yeah, so for my board, what I found in each of my scenarios, boards don't really have an onboarding plan. So they're looking for their executive to come up and help them to decide how are we going to indoctrinate you to get you up to speed quickly to hit the ground running. And so for me, that's the approach I took. And in doing that, it provided relief, one. Two, it also brought my board members into a way and a space that they started to understand how much they didn't know about the organization.
Good point.
And it was a great way for me to do kind of and get to, well, what are the communication protocols that we will do for board meetings and other things? But what are the true goals of the organization? And, you know, when did we last have a board retreat? When did we last have a staff retreat? You know, what are the things we're thinking of moving the needle forward for our organization? So, you know, one of the things I'd love to say in answering this question is also I always leaned into the spaces that I didn't have a lot of knowledge about. So I just shared high-level fundraiser, right? I knew how to fundraise, loved it, did it well. So what I focused on was also wanting to learn about programs, how they operated, who they impacted, what were the key impact indicators, and how could I use that information in the case of United Way to raise funds to develop the community. So I took that and said to myself, I'm going to learn the most about the programs and analyze them quickly and with speed, and lean into that area that is going to help me to be more proficient and to really develop my elevator speech of when people are asking, so what have you been doing in your first 90 days? You know, I had that answer.
Right.
And my boards loved it and they came along for the ride. And it made them feel like, okay, we got a person who has a plan. So that's how I would answer that.
Now the second framework. So we talked about the first framework, which is the 90-day window. What's that second framework from your
A
perspective?
second framework is entitled simply Your Team. And what I did here is that I was evaluating from the very beginning my management team and those who were reporting directly to the people who reported to me. And so in framework one, in chapter five of the book, I actually provide about 15 to 20 questions per area for each of my direct reports to answer of what's going on in their departments, how they were handling things. And again, it was me trying to get knowledge and information from people to understand their operation. And I always like to say, you know, with my direct reports, you know, you've got to act like you are the CEO of your particular department. You know, I may be the, you know, have the CEO title, but you've got to act like the CEO within your departments and to help me understand it. Because one of the things that I always was big on, Greg, was saying that in that first year, I get to work in the business. But after the first year, I have to start to work on the business. I
Right.
have to look at how I'm going to work with my team and know that I don't have to worry about day-to-day operations because I have the right people in the right seats doing the right work, you know? And then how can we expand the business to do more of either what we're doing or to take away what really we shouldn't be doing? And those were kind of the indicators that I used when working and looking at my team. And also in this section, there's the reality that people are going to leave. You know, either people who wanted to go for the job didn't get it to be the CEO, and God bless them, they wanted to, you know, cut their own teeth and run their own organization. And there's just natural attrition that happens. And sometimes there's attrition that happens just because people just don't like change. And so those are things that within the first two frameworks, I really encourage men and women out there who are new in the CEO, in their new CEO situation. And thank you for in the introduction, because this isn't about somebody being a newbie. This is about every time I stepped into a new community as its CEO and leader, I was new. Maybe had
Yes.
some background, but I
Yes.
was new. I needed to learn where what I would call where the bones are buried, who knew who you wouldn't put people next to at an event, or you know, all those
Right.
things, just
Right.
human nature. And so for me, this particular framework actually helped me to decide who was going to be with me long term to be on the bus, so to speak, to move the agenda forward and to provide the change that the board hired me for and the search committee wanted. And so, you know, that was really in framework number two, really got to that really quickly by the questions that I laid out and understanding the issues and things that were happening in the organization. And, you know,
Does it?
ending, oh, Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, there's a phrase that comes to mind as I'm hearing you talk about framework number two, and it's that clarity is kindness, right? And
Yes.
that ability to bring clarity to an organization, to an existing staff, whether that clarity is I'm super excited and jazzed up about this new direction, or this is no longer the right fit for me moving forward as a professional. That clarity allows someone to make empowered decisions about their own future.
Exactly. And, you know, and your team, I always took the attitude that if people wanted to get the next step and I couldn't provide it for them, I would help them to find a way to achieve their next leadership level. Because
Right.
that's extremely important. You know, does the organization lose? Possibly in the short term, but where the gain is that the sector gets another quality leader to, you know, to provide leadership and do great things in community.
I also think long term there's a value, there's a reputational value of your organization as a place where someone can go and grow and develop in their career, that they have a leadership structure that's going to invest in them
Yes.
and support them as they move toward whatever their future career goals are. I think that
Yeah, well said.
reputationally and culturally, there's a value in that.
Yep, and you know, the other thing for me was also finding those key leaders underneath kind of the management team of who are the up and comers and who are people we could count on. And if somebody for some reason went down because of, you know, illness or something happened, that you got to know the team very quickly on who you could count on. And that kind of leads into framework number three, which I simply call the financials. And in the financial section, you know, for me, because of my budget analyst background, I walk through people through who may not have that affinity for numbers and don't understand how numbers can tell a great story. And so I would like look at first the fiscal history of the organization. So whoever my finance leader was in the organization, big or small, you know, I'd really look to see like what's the history of cash flow? What's accounts payable looking like? You know, what does the true story tell us about our organization? And you know, for me and for leaders out there's financial audits and there's program audits. So under this category, I stipulate in it is that as a new leader, you have to know how many audits are being done in an organization. And you know, if you're getting federal funding, for example, over $750,000 for one program, expect an audit. Or, you know, there's a lot of, you know, cities and counties and state organizations now, or in states, I should say, that require an audit, both financial and program, no matter what. And those take time and resources out of your finance staff. So you really got to understand what your finance team is working on. And in this scenario, I also stress the importance of having a dynamic finance chair, a person who can really help the CEO think through strategic issues as it relates to dollars and cents. And, you know, I was really, truly kind of one of those people that if I didn't have that finance chair who wasn't willing to give it their all, you know, I have a good conversation with him or her to say, look, you know, are you the right person for the position? Just like a staffer might not be in the right fit, right? And I was blessed all the time of having good people who were CPAs, who were partners of firms, particularly in the nonprofit space, who weren't working to do our audits. And what I found is that the audit community, as you know, Greg, it's a small community with any community.
Very much so.
And people share information back and forth. And so that was my guide of learning about the financial history and background. And to really understand, you know, I walked into one situation and an organization said to me, yeah, we've got a $400,000 problem. You know, we're in the red there. Well, when I peeled back the onion, it wasn't 400,000. It was more like close to 1.5 million. And it's like, ooh, we've, you know, okay, let's teach and learn and show people what we got here. And that isn't any disrespect on the leader who was there before me. It was just the reality of that, you know, some things were said yes to that shouldn't have been, and people didn't realize the ramifications. So as a new leader coming in, I took that time and that opportunity to really understand where the financial footing of the organization was and how we were going to, propel that and move that forward.
That framework is so important, Brian, because as you know, nonprofit executives come from a variety of backgrounds. You came from that budget analyst position and had a deep financial appreciation. A lot of nonprofit executives don't have that type of background. I didn't. I'm an attorney by background. So having that framework of questions to ask, things to be looking at beyond what we typically associate with the profit and loss or the budget or the balance sheet, but that kind of deeper layer of the onion is really helpful for newer nonprofit CEOs.
It really is. And, when I get approached by people in the for-profit sector who wanted to move into nonprofit, they would initially, come down and sit with me and say, "Hey, I want to have less stress. I think I've had a great 20, 25-year career. I want to go into nonprofits." And I would sit them down and say, "Wait, you got to understand, if you're looking for non-stress, this isn't it." And so actually my five frameworks now, I encourage, boards, up and coming CEOs or leaders that think they want the space, or men and women who want to make that transition and they think, "Hey, I think I might want to do this." This book is also for them because the five frameworks really point to where you'll have the strengths and the weaknesses.
Right.
And a lot of people, I saw a figure the other day that said about, 80% of nonprofit executives now are coming from outside the space. And I was like, wow, that's a huge number, right? And it's not surprising because I think some people, some boards may not realize the total business of the business. And
True.
so that's
Fair.
and that's where I think there's high turnover. And what I didn't share, I'll share it now, but there was a in the Harvard Business Review an article that I saw that said 30 to 50% of new CEOs fail in the first 18 months on the job. And I believe this whole issue of having true onboarding and it takes a good solid year to do it is really what needs to be done. And that's why I'm so passionate about this book.
Brian, talk us through the fourth and the fifth strategic frameworks.
The fourth one is I call it donor relationships. And in this one, I really take the approach of saying to people, you have to understand your revenue lines. And I walk it through in a way that I like to think makes a lot of sense. And I say, take the current income statement that you use at a board meeting for your organization and truly understand, you always have that big line that says grants and individual contributions. Well, what's behind that grants and individual contribution that could be a $7 million line, let's say? And so it's about understanding, well, what types of grants are there? Are they from foundations, governments? Are they from, people who, have a small family trust and it's a donor advised fund? And it's really looking at your revenue sources, and it's almost doing an analytical approach like you would do for your own personal portfolio. What's in your portfolio?
Right.
And is it balanced out? Does it look right? And there's all sorts of transactional revenue that an organization might be raising, or event fundraising is very different from obviously writing grants. And so I take people through this in a way to kind of say, the easy part about raising money is sitting down and asking people for it. The hard part is doing the homework and analyzing it before you go make the ask. So people know that you know who they are. You know their wants, needs, and desires. But more importantly, you can kind of align your needs and desires, hopefully, with them through the good research that you've done. And that's where I always kind of use my fundraising prowess, I guess you could say, is have an abundance mindset, but know that for organizations, people give to people. They don't give to organizations. They give to the people who are running them, a part of them. And, I have countless numbers of stories that I really kind of guide people to say, people give to people, and you got to remember that mantra. And if you do, you're going to be very, very successful, even if you don't have years and years of fundraising experience. But that's where I think your fundraising team and others and your board, and I say in the book, your board are your treasure hunters. They're the people who have connections who can really kind of help set the table. And then you, as the CEO or your development team or your program people, go in and kind of, if you will, sell what the organization is all about.
I'm
And there's
struck,
nothing
Brian,
wrong with
by the importance of relationships. Always comes out in these conversations. But as we've gone through each of the first four frameworks, they all in some way relate to relationships and the ability for a new CEO, in this case, to build strong relationships up, down, and across an organization.
I most recently saw that, the donor studies that have come out showing that now we're in the fourth year of decline of individual donations within here in America. And that's really concerning to me personally. And I know that if folks like you who are working with nonprofits as I am on a daily basis and the clients I'm working with and trying to help them in the beginning stages. And I really think at times, Greg, that people have lost the balance of the what I would call the basic blocking and tackling of good fundraising.
Right.
And I think we got to get back to that. And it's not a point and click. It's doing your homework. It's really kind of, doing it face to face. And having that one-on-one relationship. The Mackenzie Scotts of the world are. It's wonderful that they're, and that she particularly is providing all this great, revenue and resources to so many organizations in our country. But, those are few and far between, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
it's, you don't get those all the time, and you got to work for them. And that's what I try to point out in that particular section of the framework. And as a new person, that's where I'm saying, you got a lot to learn, but that's where you can delegate with your team to understand who has the relationships. How did you get the money? Is it, is it a multi-year grant? Is it unrestricted, restricted? Is it for program? Is it for operations? Those are things that sometimes, Greg, people don't know coming in as new CEOs.
Right.
And even people who are part of an organization. And I always felt that it was my duty and my role to inform people of how the revenue streams are coming into the organization. And again, so many times my board members wouldn't have a clue until I kind of did this audacious goal and said, here's what we're doing. Here's how, what we you need to understand to help me, to help the mission flourish. So, and
Brian,
then there's,
before we wrap up, talk to us about the fifth and final framework.
The fifth one is basically I call it the who. And I always say to people, you have to concentrate on who, you're doing this great work for. And sometimes we forget that within, the day-to-day of, running the organization and doing things. And let me give you a quick example. Through the first four frameworks, I was running an organization, and some of our facilities were providing a snack to kids who were coming to our facilities after school. And we had 12 sites. Three of them were providing a snack to kids, nine weren't. And so, of those organizations under the umbrella of, and it was with the Boys and Girls Clubs of Broward County, that, as the new leader, when I was first, touring and getting to know people, the clubs that didn't have them were saying, Mr. Quayle, how are you going to help us to get that? How can we get snacks to our kids? And I found out in my travels that the three clubs that were getting it had a volunteer, two volunteers who just said to themselves, it's not right that kids aren't getting enough food at school. And by the time they get to the club in the afternoon and will be with us till 5, 6, or 7, or even 8 o'clock at night, we've got to give them food because of their economic situation and the time they ate at school, which in some cases might have been as early as 10:30, 11,
Right,
right?
right.
So those were things that, and so when we really delved into the issue, what we found is that our who really lived in food deserts. And so while the snack was important, what really became important for us was how are we going to find a way to feed the kids a hot meal before they went home at night? Because that was a real issue. And then the other issue was communicating to parents of why fast food and why processed food wasn't good for their kids or for them, because it was an education issue. And it, you know, and again, because of limited income and other things. So fortunately for us, we were the first club in the state of Florida to provide through the Obama administration in 2010, the After School Meal Act at the time. And we were able to provide a snack and a hot meal to kids every day, year round. And there's a lot to the program, but I'll say here because of time constraints, read the book, you'll see what we went through. But that's what I mean of understanding the who. It just, yes, the kids needed a snack, but the other point was there were so many other issues of what was happening in their lives and their families' lives that made them food insecure. And we were able to, you know, as having one of its te our tenets as being, you know, live a healthy lifestyle, we would say to kids, no drugs, no other things that are bad for you, you know, exercise. Well, the food element for us became a real priority because it was the basis of how can somebody, you know, study when they have the hanger pains and they're not happy, they're not going to concentrate. And so that's what I kind of display in the book is saying, that's what I mean by the who. And there's
Excellent.
another example in there regarding a capital campaign, again, which I'll save for people who want to see what that one was all about. But it was, again, about how we were going to serve our who in a better way.
Brian, the most effective leaders in any industry are lifelong learners. They're curious, they want to know more. And I know that nonprofit leaders would benefit from the insights and the wisdom that you share in the book. Before we wrap up, if folks are interested, they're listening to the podcast, they are interested in getting a copy of the book or connecting with you directly, how can they do each of those two things?
Yeah, great. It's real simple. Go to briancoyle.com. It's Brian dot com, and it takes you directly to my website. We'll tell you more about me and the book. It's Brian Quayle, all in word, dot com. Sorry. I'm on LinkedIn. Is the best way. And I chose the LinkedIn platform because I felt that that was the best way for me to initially get this book out and really talk to people in the nonprofit and business world. This book came out in May of 2023, so you know I haven't even hit the year mark yet, but I can tell you through the clients I'm already working with and people that I'm talking to, it's really helped a lot. And I've got some other plans for the future of what I hope to do to get it out more broadly. But Greg, you having me on your program, it's one step at a time. And I can't thank you enough for giving me this grand opportunity to communicate with your audience, because I think this book and the information in it can really help a lot of people, not just CEOs, but their teams, their boards. And really, to do a good job of saying, hey, when a new CEO starts, here's a ready-made plan and a five frameworks that will do you well. And what I like to say to people is that I guarantee success if you truly implement the five frameworks the way I've structured it. Because there's no easy button to push. It does take work. It takes, you know, some, you know, commitment. But I do guarantee success if they follow the frameworks and do the work.
Brian, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. For those who are enjoying the Nonprofit Vision podcast, I encourage you to share this podcast with your friends, your family, your coworkers, those who care about building the nonprofit community as we continue to move forward. Brian, thank you for taking the time to join us. I hope everybody stays safe, stay well, and we'll be back soon with another episode.